Hello, welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast. This is the weekly podcast talking about comics, the biggest news, the top comics of the week, what's trending, and the most anticipated books of the next week. We'll have show segments like Cast This, Trash It, and Treasure It, LCS Gems, and so much more. With me is Connor Christensen.
Hi, I write for the site. I also do the Star Wars podcast. I'm a Jason Todd and Gwenpool fanboy. Read what my mom would call way too many comics, and I'm very excited to be here. It's a lovely evening here in San Diego, California for me, so super stoked to be on board.
And then we also have Forrest Hollingsworth.
Hello, that's Forrest with two R's. I'm a part-time academic, full-time Venom and Spidey expert. I love sludge.
I love sludge.
Sludge and doom metal and David Lynch, and I'm excited to be on board.
And I'm David Brooke. I also like David Lynch. I also read a lot of comic books, and I love to talk about them, hence why we are starting this new podcast. And to kick things off, we want to talk about the latest news. Now, it is the beginning of the year, which is typically the slowest time for comics. Almost every publisher takes the last week of December off, but that doesn't mean news isn't happening all the time. Now, just recently, Marvel Comics was sort of hyping a new event, and everyone was going nuts on the internet. They were posting these pictures, who saved Jean Grey, and who found Captain America. They were sort of hyping the fact that everything you knew isn't what you knew, and it's all going to change. And then eventually it came out that Cosmic Ghost Rider destroys Marvel history. And everyone went with a big sigh of relief, oh, it's just a silly gimmicky thing that's going to be a fun little entertaining comic. But the crazy thing is there's some interesting creators involved. Do you guys know anything about that?
First of all, the Twitter reactions were my favorite part of the whole thing.
Yes.
People were freaking out. I remember one older man specifically came at Matt Rosenberg, who has nothing to do with it.
Come on.
And it was like right after Stan Lee passed away, which was like 2 weeks after the book got announced.
Yeah.
He's like, you guys are destroying his legacy with this Marvel Universe destroyed thing. And Rosenberg was like, I have nothing to do with that. Like, why are you coming at me? But it's our boy Paul Scheer. I love him. He does the How Did This Get Made podcast, which is awesome. He does he was in the League. He does SUV, NTJ, SD, SVU, whatever it's called, on Adult Swim. The guy's he's hilarious. I'm super excited.
Yeah, and you know, this is a little bit older news since I think it came out December 12th. But still, you're right. It was the reaction from the fans that like blew me away. People were just losing their minds thinking that...
I mean, they were sensational pictures, right?
That's true.
The one that really got me was who really gave the Fantastic Four their powers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a big historian or I don't take any of that stuff as like the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. But I was kind of like, what?
I was on the I was reading a lot of the CBR boards, and they had some ridiculous theories. It was kind of fun to track that. Like, some of the font was like, it looked like it was on fire, and a lot of people thought that meant the Phoenix was coming back, and she was going to like change history. But it turns out it's all Cosmic Ghost Rider, which kind of lumps Donny Cates into things, right? Because he's the creator of Cosmic Ghost Rider, but in fact, he's not actually writing this series.
No. And he seems more than happy to pass off the torch to them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a comedian character. It's a comedy character. And so it seems perfectly in Paul's wheelhouse to take it on. And I'm happy to see that. I'm a little bit worried about the Deadpoolification of the character for sure. I was actually just recently listening to, This Week in Marvel with CB Belusky. And they were talking about how he said, sometimes we get these characters that fall right into our laps and everyone loves them. The editors, the writers, the artists, the fans. And they just take off. The last time I can really think of one is Deadpool. And now we have Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yikes.
And I was kind of like, uh-oh. Oh, no.
Can I tell you guys something that might make you judge me? I've not read a single story that includes Cosmic Ghost Rider. I've managed to avoid
my stars and garters.
I like, even at NYCC, they gave, like, one of the panels I went to, as you're walking out, they give you a free one. And I was like, I have no interest in this whatsoever.
As soon at SDCC, when Donny Cates showed the audience his Cosmic Ghost Rider tattoo, I was like, all right, this is for real. This is going to be around for a while. It's a character you don't have to necessarily read, though, right? Mm-hmm. He is a part of from everything. He's almost in his own. Is he in his own dimension? I don't know. He's in some weird timeline.
So he is part of the 616 canon.
Right.
The thing is that that's just happening so far in the future that it hasn't really impacted anything.
Well, I can promise I'm going to read this series because, like I said, I like Paul Scheer a lot. And I'll be picking up mm-hmm. Donny Cates' Guardians of the Galaxy. And he's part of that team. So I'll get to know him intimately in the near future, I'm sure.
And there is a complete Thanos hardcover coming out in the next couple of months that has Thanos Wins, where the character debuted by Donny Cates, and also the full Cosmic Ghost Rider miniseries 1-5. So that's kind of the perfect introduction to the character before it kind of gets passed off here to Paul and them.
Right.
Which, again, I do think is a good fit for the character, but I am a little bit worried about he's already in, what, 2 series right now? So we'll see.
So speaking of Donny Cates, he was very much in the news the last few days of December when he went on Twitter and made a statement about Comicsgate. Connor, you know a lot about that, right?
Yeah. I keep forgetting that some Comicsgate guy came at me for nothing.
Oh, no.
He came at me over a tweet about the new Domino series coming out next year, but like 3 weeks after I sent it, and he tagged Gail Simone in it too. And I was just like, who is this guy? But anyway, yeah, so I can now say I've also had to deal with these people.
Me too. I've been called a social terrorist.
That's a bad.
What did they call? What did they call me? They called me something similar because we were joking about it. You're the social terrorist, and I got called like a woman supremacist. That's what I got called.
Oh yes,
it was
the
best. Yeah. But yeah, Donny Cates. I feel bad for the guy. He's had a rough couple days on Twitter.
Yeah,
he got in a spat with a fan who didn't like Venom.
Right. Yeah, the Comicsgate thing was actually the end result of that.
And I thought he handled the Venom little back and forth well, because he kind of said like, look, I'm writing the story that I want to write, and if you don't like it, mm-hmm. you don't like it, like give your balls a tug and get out of here. But like, you can't come onto Twitter and call him out and expect him to be like, oh my god, you're right, I'm gonna change the entire fucking story because you're upset. Like, he had his best comeback was like, sorry, I'm not gonna change what I'm doing because 6 people on Tumblr are upset. Like,
so what you're talking about is how people are upset with him that he's not shipping the symbiote.
Yeah,
with,
basically,
Eddie Brock.
Exactly. And someone even came kind of into the middle of it, a friend in the industry, I think, and said, "Hey, Donnie, what's going on?"
Yeah.
And he said, "People are upset that I'm not representing the symbiote and Eddie as being in a romantic or sexualized relationship."
You know, it's interesting, like, I think about where the character was before Donny Cates took over.
With Costa, yeah.
Yeah, and how he made it so the symbiote and Eddie had a baby together, basically. And
yeah,
they may not have been, like, romantic, but they were definitely in a very deep relationship. And only recently in the last story arc, Donny Cates has sort of removed the symbiote's identity completely and turned it into, like, a blind dog, like an animal. And
yeah.
I could see where those people are getting frustrated with that. I'm not saying that they're right at all for attacking him, or even right at all in general. But I can see, like, what he's doing is definitely stripping the character away. I'm not saying that he should be, like, a sexualized character, but it's kind of fascinating. Like, it has changed quite a bit in the last 6 months. Or maybe it's more like 8 months.
And I think, you know, I think that there is some merit to the argument. You know, there are people that say, well, the symbiote inherently isn't gender aligned.
Right.
It's not, you know, male or female or anything, really. It's an interesting angle for a relationship between Eddie, who is this very raw, emotional man, to reach out to this thing. And sometimes their relationship is gross and harmful, and that's kind of what Donnie's exploring.
Right.
But other times it is loving and supportive, and you get things like their child Sleeper, which was the end result of First Host under Costa. But it is way off base, I think, to just come at him and say, as one of the people said, you're disrespecting canon. Your stuff should be fan fiction.
I can't believe that. I can't believe people think that it's okay to talk to creators on Twitter or whatever, mostly Twitter, like that, you know? Like,
and that's the problem with Twitter. It's the proximity.
Yeah.
You can just at them.
Like, you're coming at a guy who has been universally acclaimed since he got into the big leagues of comics. Like, and when I say big leagues, I don't mean to belittle what he did before, but I mean, like, he's taken the reins of Venom. He's done Marvel Knights. He's taken the reins of Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, he's one of their biggest names. So you are coming at this guy when you're like, you're just some nobody who hasn't created anything and has 42 followers. Sounds a little snarky from me, but like, I always see that. I'm like, get out of here. Like, what gives you the idea that you think you can talk to them like that? Like, there's plenty of creators that I'm upset with the things they do. And I might tweet about it, but I'm not tagging them in it.
I think that's trolling. Basically.
Yeah, I'm a classy enough person that I will talk behind their back where they can't see it. And they don't know that I'm being mean.
I still have things to say, but yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I'm upset, but you don't need to know. Let me just riff on my own.
And I mean, it brings up a topic. DC, I think, put out basically a gag order to their writers to not, you know, be political online and not call people out and stuff. And for the most part, it seems to have worked. And because I mean, ultimately, is social media just like a hate machine or what do they call America? The melting pot? It's like a melting pot of hate.
Yeah. It seems to be, you know, there's a lot of stuff, right? DC definitely seems to have limited it in some way. I know some publishers have gone too far and gotten a lot of pushback. From that, I can't think of any specific examples right now, but I've seen basically contracts that include social media etiquette that have been leaked out on Twitter over the time. And I know even Marvel has gone and talked to specific people. Dan Slott and Nick Spencer are at the forefront of my mind about it. But Marvel definitely gives them more latitude than other publications.
And then meanwhile, Image Comics is straight up like, the opinions of our writers is not the opinion of us, so don't.
And maybe that's the best way to handle it. I don't know.
I think my PR brain says like, yeah, that's the best way to handle it. Is they look like there are, because then you're giving your creators complete and utter freedom. Like, hey, we're not going to limit what you say whatsoever. You do you. Just know that we don't have to support you. And it's not even necessarily saying that they won't. It just means that like that is your opinion, not ours. I think that's the best way to handle it.
Yeah.
And then like it comes down to like, if you don't like what somebody's tweeting, don't follow them.
Right.
Yeah.
Very
sure.
simple.
Yeah.
I mean, but then that's what a troll is, right? They follow people to just nat at them and get at them. Anyway, moving on. There's one more big news we want to talk about, and that's TKO Presents, which is a new publisher. There's a lot of new publishers coming out in comics lately. We had Ahoy Comics back in September, and now TKO Presents. Mm-hmm. That's two publishers within a year, or less than a year.
Yeah.
TKO Presents is a brand new publisher that has a really interesting model. You guys were just explaining it to me, and I just learned about it. So basically, you can get the comics digitally. You can get the comics in a trade paperback format.
Mm-hmm.
Or what was the third one?
A binge format, basically, where they include a whole miniseries. It's basically a miniseries. I think there's none of them are more than six issues. And they come in this kind of premium packaging. They come in a really nice, like, full top box. And they come all at once to you. I think LCSs are going to be selling them. And I think also they'll be delivered directly to the consumer. So...
Yeah, yeah. It eliminates that the monthly release thing. And we were talking about it earlier, how it allows the writer to go in and know, like, okay, so they're going to sit down, they're going to read this all at once. I can be more detailed. I can really bring up these minute little story moments in that were laid in issue one and reference it in issue five, and there's going to be no disconnect. It'll be there. I'm very, very excited. I've tweeted at TKO Presents a few times because they keep like previewing their books, and all the first issues you can read for free to everybody listening.
Yeah,
that's one of the best parts. Mm-hmm. You can essentially get a preview before you buy it. I just bought Sarah, which is by Warren Ellis. Which, I mean, they have big creators like the big two that they have. They have Warren Ellis and Jeff Lemire are doing series for them, so they're really coming out of the gate swinging. And like from what I've seen, I obviously haven't gotten my box set yet because I bought the 6-issue box set of Sarah. But the videos that they've showed online, like they're pretty good. Like think like remember when Dark Knight's Metal came out and all the issues had that thick cardstock cover and like really really high quality paper throughout, so there was no
smudging. And Batman.
Yep.
Batman Damned has those
heavy
set magazine prints.
It looks
too,
like
yeah.
that, where it's like this is really high quality stuff. I'm excited because the two stories I'm most excited about are Warren Ellis' story and Jeff Lemire's. And I'm blanking on the name of Jeff Lemire's. Warren Ellis is writing Sarah, which is about a World War II Russian sniper. But then the public
and Jeff's is about a sci-fi. Like colonization ship, but all of the adults have died.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez.
And so it's only kids left trying to take care of themselves and basically steer the ship.
Yeah, and it's like an AI is raising these kids.
I didn't know about that angle at all.
That's one
awesome.
Of the parts of it. But I'm blanking on the name. It sounds fantastic. But the co-publisher, and I think he's the CEO of the company. I'm going to butcher his name. It's like Zay Shu or something like that. He's a Hollywood screenwriter, like pretty well-respected Hollywood screenwriter. He's writing two of the series, and one of them is called Seven Deadly Sins, and it's a Western. And I'm pretty intrigued by that, too. So I'm gonna check out Sarah, see how that goes. But I'm really excited for what they're planning to do. And it's cool just to see a publisher who's willing to shake things up.
I mean, for 60 years were just single-issue stories for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And that Jeff Lemire book is called Sentient.
That's it.
Sentient.
The big thing for me is that it eliminates the need to recap your story every 3 issues.
That's true.
Sometimes when I get those Marvel omnibuses or even complete collections, I'm like, yep, I know, Doc Ock, that you have Spider-Man's body. I know. I remember.
Right.
I love Superior Spider-Man, but I remember the inciting incident.
I was
Thank
just
you.
Reviewing the Kree-Skrull War comics by Roy Thomas and Neil Adams, and it's amazing how the characters speak out loud every issue going, and I know why you're angry at me because of X and Y and Z. And you're like, oh, jeez, no one would talk like this.
Yeah, and it was even... It's gotten better over time, knowing that they're going to be collected in trays. I think writers have a little bit more leniency.
But then you have a problem with picking it up every month and not getting a full issue of content.
Yeah, true. And I much prefer Marvel having the kind of blurb page compared to what other publishers do, where sometimes I will admit, especially monthly issues, like sometimes Image does, I'm like, whoa. I don't remember this at all.
I like how in like some issues, it's like they're in like a deposition with a lawyer where they have to explain every step how they got there.
Yeah.
And then you're like,
it's basically a bottle issue. Yeah.
It's really exciting that there are publishers actually like really shaking things up. And it sounds like because the CEO is a screenwriter, maybe they have some in with Hollywood. So they're trying to like basically test out, scripts for movies.
So he did say in an interview with New York Times, and I can't remember the guy's name. He said in an interview with the New York Times that they are very, very open to having any of their scripts picked up for movies. And that was like their point, like part of the reason they wanted to release it all at once was because they wanted it to be easier to immediately like have people latch onto it and like it, and then on top of that, make it so much more easier to get picked up for a movie. I think like. The long-term plans of what they want to do, I just am really excited, but mostly just intrigued to see what they do and how they fare. I hope this isn't like a flash in the pan type deal. I hope they're around for a while.
You know, if you look at Ahoy Comics and what they're doing with Back Matter, they've got 2 or 3 short stories in every issue. They've got an additional shorter comic story on top of the main comic story. And then an artist will come in and just do one page. It's clear that fans want more value out of every issue. And it sounds like TKO Presents is sort of giving that to the readers.
And I think that there's a lot of, I don't know what the correct word for this would be. There's a lot of planning that has gone into what they've rolled out already,
right?
Some of their videos and some of their press releases and stuff is literally just them showing off all of the formats that they've planned out. Like, he holds up an iPad and flips through the pages. He holds up a cell phone and flips through the pages. He holds up a laptop and flips through the pages and says, you can read this on anything.
Mm.
They really are. They're sticking to their promise of when they launched, they said, we're going to be the first modern comic book company. And it really feels like that.
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like a lot of comic book companies, especially comic book shops, still feel like they're stuck in the like mid-90s.
Right.
Like, especially if you ever tried to order comic books online, even from Midtown, like the sites are mind-blowingly bad.
And it takes about 2 weeks to get them.
Yeah. Whereas, like, you go to a TKO Presents website, and it feels like a new website. It feels like, oh my God, it's a comic book, comic book website in 2018. This is amazing.
It's the Amazon of comics. Wait a minute, that's Comixology.
They did. I know that they said specifically recently in a Q&A type thing that they were looking at getting them listed on Amazon too. Mm-hmm. So
I'm sure fans will love that. All right, let's move on to our next segment, which is the top three books from last week. These are the books that are already out. Everyone's read them if they've gone to their local comic shop and picked up their books or gone to Comixology or TKO Presents, I suppose. Anyway, we're going to start with Comic Book Roundup, which is basically the Rotten Tomatoes of comics. If you go to comicbookroundup.com, you can see a lot of our reviews and everyone else's, where they tabulate the scores of every book. And the top three books of last week, now, I'm just going to preface this by saying there was probably, 12 books last week? It was a very small week.
If that.
DC didn't even release a book last week.
Didn't release one book. I was shocked by that.
Nothing new from DC. They were like, yeah, it's Christmas. Everybody go home.
Now, if you don't know, there's typically something like 100, 150 books every single week. So this is a crazy time to be reading comics at the end of the year. But that said, the third, we're going to go through, and we're actually going to talk about our top three books. And we're going to start with Comic Book Roundup. But their third highly rated book was Marvel Action Avengers #1, which I believe is an IDW book.
It is.
I'm right. And it's also a kid's book, I think, right?
I'm right.
Yeah, I knew it the whole time. I was right. Yeah, you're right.
You got an 8.3, which is actually, it's for the AIPT scale, which you can see on the About page. That's actually a good. It's just before a great for our scale system. Now, let's go on to Forrest. What was your third favorite book of last week?
X-Force, #1 by Ed Brisson and Dylan Burnett. I wrote the review for the site. I was really excited to get my hands on it. I really love particularly Remender's Uncanny X-Force.
Yes,
great series.
I love the kind of weird mix of, like, really serious grittiness that X-Force brings, but also sometimes the off-the-wall funny. Those characters are really empowered to say things that the X-Men wouldn't. And Brisson really leaned into that in this issue in a good way. Domino calls Deathlok a Ted Bundy bot. and I laughed out loud. But I had some nitpicks with it. It's bookended by two weird tonal shifts. The first couple of pages have a child death, which isn't out of the norm for X-Force. The Uncanny X-Force Remender plot revolves around them killing a kid. Mm-hmm. It's not beyond the limits of what X-Force does, but the back end of it, kind of a backup story, is about Boom Boom trying to meet up with the rest of the team, and it's just laugh out loud funny.
Right.
And it just didn't necessarily feel like it was, it kind of felt like it had a foot in both rather than, like it was walking in one direction.
Yeah. The tone was off.
Yep.
My third choice was also X-Force. I was actually going to review it, but then I was like, hey, do you want to review it? You're like, yes.
Yes, I did very much.
I felt like it was, there wasn't a lot to it. It was not a lot of content to it. It was like mostly a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of action book. And it got you to the place where you kind of knew the role of every character, although Cannonball wasn't really in it much. It gave you a sense of it's going to be fast and it's going to be violent, right? Like, there were some pretty brutal kills in that book, which you don't always see, especially with some of these characters. Like, I haven't been reading Domino, but I'm sure she's not murdering people in her Gail Simone book, right? Am I right?
I don't think she, I mean, she does, but it's always within reason.
Right.
Which sounds, that's
interesting.
A weird,
I haven't been reading
very that. Weird justification. Yeah, she murders people, but
I
like
need to check that
for
out.
A good reason. It's a good book. I don't want to get off topic. It's very good. I like it a lot.
I have to say, I don't think this book would have been on my top three if there were more books.
Same for me. Yeah.
So, Connor, what was your third pick?
X-Force? Nah, it wasn't X-Force.
It was Uncanny X-Force.
I read the Rick Remender volumes, and wow.
Yeah. Well, if that was your number three, we're going to come to blows.
Yeah. No, mine is actually Uncanny X-Men number 7. Like we talked about, very slim pickings this week, but I liked Uncanny X-Men a lot, specifically because Glob Herman gets to kind of be a badass, which is so cool. But there's a lot of really cool moments in this book, and one of my favorites was with Glob Herman, where he says, like, they're in the Age of Apocalypse, for those who don't know, the younger X-Men team, which is, I'm not going to list them all off because I only know like half their names because there's so many of them. But
there's four.
Yeah. Yeah. That's too many for me to count. I can only count to like two.
Yep. Okay.
But Glob is talking to Armor and he says, like, I like being here. I have cooler powers here. I'm useful here. Yeah. And it was kind of this very heartfelt moment for me where I was like, wow, like, what a poor guy. And it made me think of the Christmas special issue. And to everyone who has read it for us, I know you have, Dave, I'm not sure if you've read it. One of the stories is a one-page story about Glob, and it's so hilarious and so sad at the same time, where he nails a mistletoe right above his door, and then he takes a chair and he sits down and he just waits. But I like that Glob got to be useful for once. That made me very happy. Plus, like, I like stories in the Age of Apocalypse. I always find it fascinating. I like post-apocalyptic stories. And I thought this really worked. Plus, Pixie has, like, she looks way cooler than she does in the normal universe.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
she's got those big gargoyle
wings. Yeah. So I liked it a lot. I think Uncanny X-Force is solid. It's had a few issues that have been, you know,
Uncanny X-Men.
Sorry, Uncanny X-Men. See what you guys?
Dave and I were Johnny on the spot.
you fool! It's not X-Force. But yeah, so Uncanny X-Men number 3 for me.
I wonder if Glob's going to be a big deal soon because he's also a big part of Dead Man Logan. But anyway, moving on.
So he is Ed Brisson's baby.
That's true.
And I think that's really all there is to it.
So, for comic book roundup, the second highest rated book was Bone Parish from Image Comics. Bone Parish number 5 with an 8.7. I have not been reading this series. Anybody?
I haven't either. Yeah. It has a really great, almost monochromatic cover with an albino alligator with a trail of blood coming out of its mouth. And I was like, oh, that is some good down south gothic vibes.
Yeah, I haven't read it. I have a general sense of what it's about. I think the TLDR is there's a new drug that people snort and it's people's bones. Like, and that's
oh.
I think somebody is gonna tweet me and be like, nah, it's not what it's about, and that's fine. I think it has something to do with that. But it is Colin Bunn writing it, and know a lot of people don't like Colin Bunn's work on X-Men Blue. They don't like what he did with X-Men back before, X-Men versus Inhumans. I think he was a part of that. I know people don't really like his work with superheroes.
Superhero stuff, yeah.
His independent stuff is so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
All of his creator titles are home runs. And also, just to clear the air, in case for some reason Colin Bunn listens to this, I like his superhero stuff a lot. You can go back and read my Deadpool Assassin reviews where I'm calling for him to be made the Deadpool.
I remember that.
Because he's such a... But his independent stuff is absolutely incredible. That being said, I have not read a single issue of Bone Parish.
Right. Well, you know, if it's Southern horror written by Colin Bunn, it just harkens back to Harrow County, and I'm going to get on that right quick. Yep. And that's really all I have to say about that. You heard?
Now, could you get right quick to your second pick, Forrest?
I could. That was Uncanny X-Men number 7 for me as well. I liked it a lot, mostly for the visuals, though. The art there is fantastic. The Age of Apocalypse stuff just looks so cool. You were talking about it just a minute ago, Connor, but Glob looks awesome. He looks like Ghost Rider Glob Herman.
Oh my god, he really does.
You know, he's got like these tactical pants on. His body's on fire. He crushes a dude's skull. Armor's got like Sword Arms, Pixie, Rockslide, they all look great. I love Glob is on fire, and also Rockslide is on fire. I think our X-Men editor-in-chief, Chris Hassan, called that out in his review. And he also called out a big issue that I had with it, which is that's not how Age of Apocalypse works, y'all. They get teleported to the Age of Apocalypse by Legion in the previous issue and then remember everything about who they are and what their mission is.
Right.
And previously, and it's like I said earlier, I'm not a historian. I don't take any of this canon stuff as holy grail, but previously, and I'm sure someone's going to at me and say I'm wrong, but that's not how the Age of Apocalypse stuff has worked.
Right.
They should be pulling from whatever previous life they've had in this hellscape. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of operating on this premise that doesn't really jive with any of the Age of Apocalypse stuff, even though it serves the Uncanny X-Men plot pretty well. And that just felt kind of weird to me.
It's fun that at the same time, though, it's like it's a big celebration of X-Men. By mixing it up like that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, very much. Agreed. Yeah. And this whole X-Men Disassembled thing that's kind of been building through the first 10 issues coming out weekly really does feel like that. I know it's really setting up a bunch of stories that are going to spin out of it, starting with X-Force this week as well. But it does feel very much like a celebration of everything that has been and is to come. And that's a big part of why I'm okay with it. Regardless of canon or whatever.
My second pick is a celebration of things from the past and things to come, which is Superior Spider-Man number 1.
Yes.
I think that was one of my favorite bits of Dan Slott's run on Amazing Spider-Man. And I think Christos Gage also helped him with a lot of that, who also writes this new series with Mike Hawthorne penciling. If you haven't heard of Superior Spider-Man, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. No, I'm just kidding. But
this is now the Superior Spidey-cast.
No, but it's a fascinating look at a hero who is also a villain, or it's a villain trying to become a hero. And it's an interesting, I think, new take on the heroism kind of angle. And in this new issue, we kind of establish where he is, even though Superior Octopus already kind of did that. Establishing that the character's in San Francisco and who the main villains are and what his life is like and what he's doing, and he's a college professor and all this. It feels new in a lot of ways. And it came to my attention recently that I don't think it's going to have legacy numbering, right? Because Amazing Spider-Man was Superior Spider-Man.
Correct. So yeah, this is a number one.
Yeah, so it is actually going to be a number one. We're not going to, in two issues, find out it's issue 500 or whatever.
No. Nope. Yeah.
But I actually reviewed this for the website. You can see that at aiptcomics.com. And you can read my detailed summation there. But I liked the issue a lot. Hawthorne did a really good job with the art. It's got a darker tone. He even has black webs, guys.
Ooh. And, that's
I'm
so
really excited.
Goth.
It is. Oh, my God. If only this comic came out 20 years ago. No, it's an exciting time to be a Spider-Man fan, I think. And it'll be interesting to see how this character weaves in and out of the main book. I'm sure it will eventually, right?
I think so. It has to, yeah.
So, Connor, what was your second choice?
All right, not kidding this time. X-Force, number one.
Nice.
Not much I can say that you guys didn't say. I will say I agree with Forrest that it was the front and the end of the book are... or the beginning and the end of the book are both pretty jarring. But I think it was purposeful, at least at the beginning, to immediately set the stage that, like, these are not the X-Men. They are very, very different. Like, even though it's not X-Force who is killing this, like, I mean, he's like a 12 or 13-year-old kid gets shot
yeah.
in the face
yep.
on, like, the second page. It's a very, like, oh, wow, this is a very different X-Men book. But I think it succeeded in doing that. Which I enjoyed. And then I did like the mix of the humor and the violence. And I think it's just, it elevates the story so much more when you know, like, this is a very lethal X-Men team who are usually the opposite of lethal. And I agree that the Boom Boom story at the end
Boom
was
Boom, yeah.
very funny, but felt very random and totally different from the rest of it. But overall, I liked it a lot. I'm very excited to see what happens moving forward. I especially like the fact that they keep calling the new Cable Kid Cable, And he gets really mad about that. And correct me if I'm wrong, they've been rather ambiguous about what his actual age is. Like, we just know he's young, right?
Yeah.
He looks like he could be, like, 17, 16.
I
will say, regarding that, I was listening to This Week in Marvel. They did two episodes recently with C.B. Blowski. Over the last 2 weeks, about every comic that Marvel has released in 2018, and Ryan, the host, said, "And Cable is dead." And CB was really quick to say, "Well, no, he's not. Kid Cable is here."
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think maybe at some point they're just going to start calling him Cable.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like they've retconned about a lot of Cable's history by bringing this character in.
Yep.
Yeah. And absolutely. I'm not going to go on a tangent about this, I promise, but I will say, does this mean that this isn't a question, this is a fact. This version of Cable has not met Hope and did not raise
Hope.
That's
true. And so if she's still alive, though, he eventually will, have it, right?
Okay, I'm done. Time paradoxes and loop.
Yep, I was just going to say, and we edited out 20 minutes of the podcast. And
now moving on.
Now my brain's in a pretzel. Somebody else go.
The number one book, according to Comic Book Roundup, with an 8.9 was Fantastic Four number 5. Which I will get to. Spoilers. Forrest, what's your number one pick?
My number one pick was Superior Spider-Man number 1. And you already touched on a lot of what I liked about that, Dave.
Yeah.
The only other thing I have to say about it is the perfect end result of Spider-Geddon. It is, for all intents and purposes, it is the reason that Spider-Geddon was written.
Mm-hmm.
I reviewed all of the, or I think, Dave, you actually reviewed two of the Edge of Spider-Geddon tie-ins.
Yep.
But after that, I reviewed all the Edge of tie-ins. I reviewed all of Spider-Geddon, and I reviewed all of the tie-in series from there. And the event was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I really felt like all it was doing was setting up great stories, particularly for Otto in Superior Spider-Man, Miles, and Gwen.
Interesting.
And Miles came out, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
With Saladin Ahmed, and that was great.
Yep.
Now we have Otto here in Superior Spider-Man. I thought that this was fantastic. I thought it was perfectly in keeping with Otto's character. I thought it was a perfect echo of what Slott did with the character. You know, I love the kooky things that Otto says. The die is cast.
Yes, old school.
That kind of stuff. I actually put that in my cards asking my groomsman to be my groomsman.
Oh,
I said,
funny.
I'm getting married. The die is cast.
Jeez, I love it.
Will you be my groomsman? But there was a lot there. You know, he's struggling with, am I Peter? Am I Otto? Who am I? I'm definitely Spider-Man.
Right. That's well said.
And that just rang really true to me. And it felt like a great step out of Spider-Geddon. And it really felt like that's what Christos was writing the whole time Spider-Geddon was happening.
Or do you mean Spider-Geddon?
Yeah, I know Nick and Ryan, Nick Lowe, the editor of Spider-Man, and Ryan, the host of This Week in Marvel, both love that.
Moving on, my number one pick was Fantastic Four number 5. I haven't loved Fantastic Four since it's come back. I feel like it's been stretching thin their comeback, and it's been awkward at times, and it hasn't been flowing quite correctly. They've been officially back for an issue now, I think. Or was it 2 issues? And now they're having this big wedding issue where the Thing gets married, and it's shared between 3 different artists, Mike Allred, Adam Hughes, and Aaron Cooter. And I think Dan Slott, the writer, did a fantastic job not only pacing the entire book, but plotting the entire book so that when the art does change, because some of these artists are quite drastically different from each other, it makes sense, like it's a flashback or it's a cutaway to the bachelor party. Yeah,
that's cool.
And it's a massively long issue too, but I didn't think there was a page that had anything that didn't need to be there. Lots of fun character stuff. I mean, Thor calls Rocket Rabbit, which is like, whoa, wait a minute. Are we in the Marvel movie universe? Like, I'm sure it's like a one-off line that doesn't really matter. But I mean, it's stuff like that where you like laugh. It's a lot of joy in the book, and it was very entertaining. I thought I gave it a 10. Which is probably why it's an 8.9 on Roundup. I helped push that score up. I don't give a lot of 10s. I probably give like maybe 10 tens a year, but I also review like, I don't know, 300 books a year, maybe more, 500 books a year.
You're prolific in your reviews.
You're up there, yeah.
So yeah. That isn't a lot for me. I do give a lot of eights and nines. But anyway, I was just floored with the quality of the book. And it sets up a really massive story with two of the Fantastic Four's biggest villains. So I don't know. I think it just hit the ball out of the park.
And I do want to ask just real quick, because I haven't read it at all. They actually got married, right?
They did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the solicits were over and over saying, this is really going to happen. This is really going to happen. And, of course, there is a, I don't want to spoil it, there is a tease where it's like, maybe it won't happen. But, yes, they did get married. Mm. And okay. There's no Skrulls. There's no doppelgangers, nothing like that. It's a very sweet issue. And it's not mostly about the wedding. Actually, the wedding's only like five pages, maybe. Most of it's about the bachelor party and getting ready. It's a lot about the love they have and why they're so good together. So, and that's important for a wedding issue. Anywho, Connor, what's your number one?
Really quickly, before I get to my number one pick, I have 2 points. The first is a story about the Fantastic Four, number five. They showed a preview of it at New York City Comic Con, and one of the pages is his wife-to-be, who is blind, at a strip club, oogling at the male stripper. And I remember sitting in the audience, and the guy next to me, who was also a reporter, I don't know who he was working for, just goes, why would she be at a strip club? She's blind. And I died laughing. I was like, oh my God, he's totally right. Why is she there? Unless you can strip in Braille. I don't know. Hopefully that doesn't anger the blind.
Well,
community.
To jump in, the wedding special, not this issue, but the wedding special before this, his bride-to-be makes that point like over and over. Like,
oh, okay.
They have,
oh, okay. So they're aware.
Yeah.
I think in the page you're talking about, I think that was by Adam Hughes, I think the girls are describing what...
I think you shared that in Slack, and I laughed out loud.
They're just...
It says something like, it goes clockwise, it goes counterclockwise, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
All right, that's that's awesome.
You're right.
The second point before I get to my number one pick is people might be listening and go, wow, these guys are Marvel shills. We're not. Remember, DC did not release a book last week. We couldn't pick a DC book. We wish That's we true. Could. And my number one pick is not a Marvel book.
Ooh.
My number one pick is Die, 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 number 6. It's Robert Kirkman, Scott M. Gimple, Chris Burnham, and Nathan Fairbairn in what is probably the most batshit crazy book of the year. It is so incredibly entertaining. This issue specifically could possibly be the wildest one yet. Now, fair warning, a lot of people would deem this book as problematic. It is unapologetically violent.
Yeah.
Very, very harsh language. Like a C word is dropped in the third page of this book.
Yeah.
But it is so wildly entertaining and so just intricate in the story it's telling, and it is sort of a tale about family and brotherhood and growing up. And I mean brotherhood as in literal brotherhood. So it's just got so much going for it. And the biggest thing is it's just wildly entertaining. And Robert Kirkman, it's something I didn't realize reading The Walking Dead or the little bit of Outcast that I've read. But Robert Kirkman's super funny. He has some just killer jokes in this book. And we were talking about before we started recording, the cover to Die, 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 number 6 is just unbelievable and unbelievably violent. Like I said, this book is unapologetically violent, but it is one of those books that every month it comes out, it's the first thing I read when I get home from the comic shop. It is just so wildly entertaining. It is like it's like mainlining every single 80s action movie all at once in comic book form. I love it. And this was a great issue that supported the rest of the series. Even if you don't go read the book, please go look up the cover. Because the cover is the craziest cover. There's a kid...
You know what? If you scroll down on the website of this podcast, you'll see the cover.
Yeah, there's a kid ziplining on somebody's intestine. Okay? That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
All right.
All right, moving on. In our next segment, we're going to be talking about what's trending right now. A weekly feature where we each give our take on what is trending in popularity or dropping in value with fans. And this week, we're talking about old man, lady, thing, series events. Be it Old Man Hawkeye, Old Lady Harley Quinn, or Harley. What is Laura?
Old Woman Laura was the last arc of All New Wolverine.
And then there's Old Man Daredevil.
Well, that's a slight spoiler. Should have wrote that in our show notes. If you haven't finished Old Man Hawkeye, sorry.
Now, there's also Old Man Star-Lord coming.
Yep.
Old Man Peter Quill.
Jeez Louise.
I think is what it's called. Old Man Quill.
And I bet you Mark Millar is very unhappy about all this on some level, on some wavelength, because he's the one who started it all with Old Man Logan.
But from what I've read, he's more indifferent about it.
Oh, really?
I feel like he gets more upset when they do movie adaptations that suck. I don't know if he's even really come out and said anything for or against all these Old Man series. Now, it helps, and this is something I find is funny, because I remember Old Man Hawkeye got announced, and the first thing I did was groan, which I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And I was like, why? You're going to beat a dead horse? Like, Old Man Logan was just... it's a classic Wolverine story. Just leave it alone. Let it go. And then Ethan Sachs came in and told a killer story. And it's like one of my...
Also writing Old Man Quill.
Yeah, yep. Same guy doing Old Man Quill. And hopefully there's a volume 2 of Old Man Hawkeye. Because like I said, it's very open-ended. And I would love for Old Man Hawkeye volume 2 starring Old Man Daredevil.
You know, not even to mention that, Old Man Logan became its own series.
Old Man.
Oh, yeah, that too. We totally glazed over
with
that.
With Jeff Lemire writing, and he did an excellent job.
Yeah. And
and Ed Brisson.
And
now,
Andrea Sorrentino did the art for a bit. And
really?
He's...
Yeah, I need to
check
that out.
He's real good. But it's just, it's funny because this is a trend that we're seeing in so many comics right now, at least from the big two. And... it should be stupid, and none of these stories should work. But they're all good.
I've just fawned over Old Lady Harley, and I thought I wouldn't like it. Although it is written by Frank Thierry and Anaki Miranda's drawing, and they're both excellent creators, so I shouldn't be surprised, but it just works so well.
This whole trend of, like, let's make the heroes old, and me personally... I don't really like old people that much. Sorry, Grandma, if you're listening.
No.
I have opinions about the olds, okay?
And, olds.
The olds. But
and then they edited out 20 minutes of the podcast.
When Connor went on a very poor taste.
Well, do you guys think this trend will continue, or do you think it's something that'll die off?
Okay, here's the thing. I think that... they're good. Connor, you're definitely not wrong. Everyone has surprised me. Old Woman Laura announces the last kind of arc of All New Wolverine, which Tom Taylor, X-23, is my favorite X-Men character. I was a little like, oh no. You know, they're going to echo one of the coolest, most inventive Wolverine stories, and I'm just not going to like it. But it's really a response to those kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into it too much or spoil anything. But it even has a kind of response to Superior Spider-Man. And they're set in the far-flung future where Laura is kind of... heroes have saved the world. And really the only villain left is Doctor Doom. And he tries to swap minds with her. Totally a la Doc Ock and Spider-Man, and she just kicks him in the chest with her toe talon, and he dies.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, all right, you know, it's a total response to that.
Yeah, I mean, you can basically do whatever you want since you're pushing into the
future.
Like Cosmic Ghost Rider.
You can do whatever you want. Hawkeye can be... it's a post-apocalyptic story, pretty much. Old Man Logan really looks at what happens to Logan, but also what happens to the world. And I think that's cool. As long as it stays interesting, as long as they keep exploring different angles for the characters and the world, I'm down for it.
I think that's gonna...
but also Marvel doesn't know when to stop.
Well, you know, and now DC's getting a taste. So what's next? Old Man Batman? Old Man Superman?
Okay, we did Old Man Batman. It was called The Dark Knight.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Oh, my God.
The Dark Knight Returns.
Mark Millar isn't a genius. He stole the DC idea. My God. You know, the funny thing is, Old Lady Harley, the only reason why, not the only reason, but one of the biggest reasons why it's so good is that Frank Thierry can do whatever he wants, and he can stuff it with ideas. It's not necessarily because she's old. It's just because everything is different in the future. Let's move on to the next section, which we like to call Top 3 Books for Next Week. This is where we just talk about the three books, not necessarily in any order, that we're really excited about. I'm thinking, Connor, you could just go through all three, and you can let us know what you think.
All right, yeah. So, number one for me, like I said, no order, Heroes in Crisis, number 4. Tom King is writing, Clay Mann is doing the art. I haven't really noticed the public perception of this book. I've talked to some people in person who really like it. I've seen some people on Twitter very upset about it. I like it a lot so far. I think maybe I'm just a Tom King fanboy. Who knows? I just love the way he panels out his stories. Like, the way that he does the classic 9-panel setup is wonderful. And it's very clean and crisp art. And it's an interesting whodunit story, although it's kind of obvious at this point whodunit. So I really, really enjoy that. My number 2 pick is The Whispering Dark number 3, which is from Dark Horse Comics. That is written by Christopher Emgard with art by Tomas Ira. Ira, I'm guessing. Or Era. I don't know. What I do know is it's a great book. It is essentially kind of a modern tale of Apocalypse Now / Into the Heart of Darkness, but with, like, modern political landscape tossed into it. It's super interesting. It is about a helicopter pilot who crashes in the Russian mountains in a near-future war between the United States and Russia. And Russia nukes the area they're in, and they have to get out of it. And then it's all about her and her squad slowly losing their minds and losing their grasp on humanity. It's really good. If you're looking for, like, a gritty gritty military story, this is it. It's a great story. And then coming in at number 3 for me is Empty Man number 3, written by our boy Colin Bunn. Can't remember off the top of my head.
The official comics writer of the AIBT Comics podcast.
A boy!
A boy!
This is me making up for my comments about saying some people don't like his superhero
your
stuff.
Your diatribe earlier.
But Empty Man is his series. If I'm not mistaken, this is volume 2. I did not read the first volume.
It is, yes.
But I have read the first 2 issues of this series, and I really, really enjoy it. It's very dark. It's weird. It's unsettling. I'm blanking on the artist's name right now, but the art is awesome. It's like kind of, it's a little smudgy, but that makes the story feel that much more insane, because it is kind of a story about insanity. And it's really cool, and it's fleshed out with a lot of living and breathing characters who have their own motivations and are part of these branching agencies and such. So very, very much excited for this release. Empty Man number 3. And that's mine. There's my top 3.
Very nice. So I'll just go. I have an advantage in that I've already read 2 of my 3 picks, so I already know how good they really are. My first pick is Old Lady Harley. Oh, coincidence. We just talked about this. Frank Thierry stuffs so much humor and so many twists and turns into each issue. It feels like this 6-issue maxi series, it could have, if another publisher had their hands on it, been a 15-20 issue series. There's so many ideas flutter. And so every issue, every page feels like you're getting, like, every dollar it's worth. My second pick is Detective Comics 995. That's by Peter J. Tomasi and Doug Mankey. This is the second issue in their latest story arc, and the first issue was very, like, detective-based. And, I mean, for a comic called Detective Comics, that's what you should have. And this second issue, it gets really hammers home Bruce Wayne getting pushed to the max and having to kind of resolve the issues in his life and potentially letting his emotions carry him away, which is, I think, typically some of the best Batman stories. They push Bruce and they make him more human, and then he becomes less of a superhero. And then my third pick would be Conan the Barbarian by Jason Aaron and Mahmoud A. Esrar. I was a huge Kurt Busiek Conan fan when it was back at Dark Horse.
Yeah.
I think I own all of them. And I kept buying them too. I can't remember the writer who took over. Anyway, it's just an amazing series because when it's done right, because you can sprinkle in the fantasy, but it still is a sword and sword. It's a sword and sorcery series, right? But the fantasy isn't so abundant that it's like taking over. It's more about a man who's just really strong and super heroic, beating anyone, even if they have magic on their side. And it's got this, it's sort of got a fairy tale thing going on too, or it typically does. I don't know what Jason Aaron is going to do at all, but considering what he says on Twitter, I think he's as passionate about Conan, probably more so than I am. So I think it's going to be a good series. And those are my three.
And it leads perfectly into my number one for next week, which is Conan the Barbarian. I don't have much more to add aside from what you said. You perfectly encapsulated everything that I feel about it, aside from how absolutely beautiful those Asad Ribic covers are. I think he did two covers for him for the coming week, and both of them are just breathtaking. They really almost look like Frank Franzetti pieces. That real cool, like almost heavy metal D&D art. And it just is so kinetic and weighty, and you really feel like it's realistic, but also slightly elevated by the fantasy, like you were saying, Dave. And I love seeing that rendered in the art, and I think Jason is going to do a really good job in rendering that in the story. Maybe we can get a tax cut. My next one is Man Without Fear, which I think is a prelude to the Chip Zdarsky Daredevil story, which is coming. And that's really the reason that I'm interested in this. I will admit to not being the biggest Daredevil fan. I really love the issues that Chris Samnee drew. There's some great Daredevil art, but none of the stories have really stuck with me. I'm very, very interested, though, in where Chip can take it. And that's largely because of where he took Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man. Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man number 310 was my favorite issue, a single issue of the last year. It made me cry. I cried spider tears. And if he can do the same for a character that I haven't necessarily cared the most about, I haven't even been compelled to watch the show. But I'm really interested in giving it a shot this time around. And I want to do it right. And I know that that starts with taking these kind of prelude series and stuff. And then my last one for the week is Uncanny X-Men number 8. I have been really excited to pick up Uncanny X-Men every week. I would happily pick it up every week, although my wallet wouldn't be as happy. I think I know where they're going every time, but I don't. And that's what keeps it so interesting to me. Is this going to be an Age of Apocalypse story? Is it going to be a continuation of what's going on for the rest of the team outside of Age of Apocalypse? Are Legion and X-Man suddenly going to become melded into one character? I have no idea what's going on. But it feels like we were talking about earlier, such a good celebration of everything X-Men has been before, but also a really good concentrated step into the future. And I'm totally compelled to pick it up every week to see where they're going from here.
So those are our top picks. What's our top cover of the week? This is where we talk about the cover art, because what is that saying they say? Don't judge a book by a cover. Well, now we are. This is a great time to point out every week we have the Judging by the Cover column, which points out the best cover art from two of the AIPT staff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with mine. I'm going to go with Man Without Fear, number one. It's a variant cover by Raphael. Oh my God, how do I say his last name? Albuquerque?
Albuquerque.
Albuquerque? Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Using just black and red, he's got, and you can look, if you scroll down, you'll see our selections on the AIPTcomics.com website on the article for the podcast. He's using these like bullseyes behind him to sort of show his sense of hearing, his sonar sense. But then in front of him is this bloody trail down this alleyway, and to his right and left is this building, this black, stark building. And it's the contrast is just so striking, and you're drawn right to the center. And it's only maybe 3 inches it's going to be on the page, how big Daredevil is. And most of it is black and red, but the use of negative space is just beautiful. Forrest, what's your pick?
My pick, you brought up Alex Ross, and my pick leads right into that. Immortal Hulk number 11. I will admit to not having read a single issue of that so far, and that's because I wanted to read it in trade. Mm-hmm. I saw that the first trade is out, and I'm really excited to go pick that up. I'm going to go down to the local comic shop within the week if I can. But man, the covers have been so amazing. Oh, yeah. This one is no different. Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but Hulk is in hell? Question mark?
Spoilers?
Or gonna be soon? Gonna be soon? Yeah.
I think in this issue, so, he will be. I believe hell, the doors to hell just opened, but I don't know, because they didn't... Okay. They haven't necessarily confirmed it, but they've been hinting at it for quite a while.
For a while, yeah. And a lot of the solicits pretty much just said, Hulk is in hell. So, yeah. And this cover really nails that. You've got this kind of emaciated Hulk figure crawling out of like a molten pool. And what looks like pillars of smoke in the background is actually pillars of like corpses twisted around each other. And I was like, whoa.
That's amazing for Alex Ross, too, who's such a positive, like it's always like bright and heroic.
Right, yeah. And it's just so kind of disarming to see the Hulk in this like really thin but still large figure. Mm-hmm. And he really looks depowered but still I'm jumping off the page, and I was really drawn into that.
And I will say this for us, because you said you haven't read it, yep. The book itself is as good as the covers.
I'm
not a Hulk fan, like, at all. And I love this series. I adore it. It's incredible. So
I've reviewed every issue, and I am with you. It is just so good. It's on the top of its game. It's one of the best horror comics out there right now.
Yeah, it's a that's the best part. It is a horror comic through and through. And Al Ewing is killing it. my choice, Justice League Odyssey number 4 by Stefan.
I think we should just have Forrest say all the names from now on.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
well, anyone but Connor. Probably.
He's the one who put a J in the middle of Stefan or Stefan.
Well, his parents did, I think.
Yeah. Anyway. God, this is a problem when I was doing Pull This, is I always pick the creators and the artists with the hardest names, and it was a nightmare. But anyway, I really enjoy Sajik's art. He did part of the Dark Knight's Metal tie-in, Gotham Resistance, if I'm not mistaken, which I really enjoyed that. But this cover specifically, first of all, I really enjoy how detailed Cyborg's... not his armor, but just the texture of his persona is. Like, it's very, very detailed. It's almost scale-like. And then there's this, like, blurred background, which really puts the action on the cover to the forefront and really makes the moment that much more dramatic. And I love this character, or this cover so much. And I like the series a lot, too. But, yeah, it's a really cool cover, and I dig it. I'm not great on analyzing art, guys. Just art itself, so I can't say much more than just like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting issue. We're all critics, we all write reviews, but most of us are only writers by trade, so we know mostly good words, good sayings, good plotting.
They don't write the story good.
So good. But if you keep reading and reviewing, sometimes you can learn a little bit about art, and you know, you get some lingo in there. But I think we can all appreciate it, and I think anyone can. So, and I know you, Connor, have reviewed so many books. I know you have a good taste for art.
When I critique the art in books, I don't like to critique it going like, I didn't like this, because it's art. It's not about liking it. It's how effective is it in telling the story that needs to tell. And I'm so glad I get to make this reference, because I want to make this reference every single podcast. The best example of art terrifically telling the story is The Wildstorm by Warren Ellis and John Davis Hunt. Mm. John Davis Hunt does the art for it, and it is incredible. It makes the entire story flow seamlessly in his action sequences, and I feel like a lot of action sequences in comics aren't great. They're kind of hard to follow, and it's just a lot of booms and bams and bright colors and one big punch. His are like I've said it many times, but it's like you're reading a Hollywood storyboard of a John Wick fight scene. Like, they are so incredibly drawn out and so incredibly spaced that it's so easy to follow exactly how the fight's going. That's my tangent about the Wild Storm. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Well, you aptly pointed out, you know, covers need to be one big punch, and the best covers really capture
interest.
Let's move on to our segment of the week. This is a rotating segment. We have something like 8, I think. Probably going to have more.
Yeah.
We got some fire ideas, people.
If you have any ideas, just add us.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do.
Exactly.
I normally would say please don't add us, but please do in this case.
And this week, we're going to start with a tried and true one that we've all done in our beds at our parents when we were little, sleeping and thinking, who would play Archangel in a movie? Who would play Wolverine? Would it be Robert De Niro? I don't know. It's called Cast This.
Robert De Niro is Wolverine?
So I say that because
you're talking to me, eh?
Bob? When I was growing up, I used to read. I'm a little older than the other two co-hosts on this show.
I have nipples, bub. Could you milk me?
No. I say that because I used to read Wizard magazine religiously, which doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And they used to have a casting section. And I swear to God, for like 5 years straight, whenever they did an X-Men cast, this they had Robert De Niro as Wolverine, and even then, he was old for the role. But anyway, so we're going to be casting X-Force, and not just any X-Force. X-Force number one, the issue that came out last week, we're going to be casting that. If that was a movie, who would play each role?
Ooh. Can I go first? I'm literally
It sounds like Connor.
Yeah. I'm shaking.
Either has to pee or let me go first. Go first. Go ahead.
Domino. No shade to Zazie Beetz. She did fantastic.
I was going to say, your work is done.
In Deadpool 2, she was great. I really enjoyed it. My choice, though, and there was a little bit of foreshadowing before the podcast when we were talking, so you guys might see this coming. Chloe Bennett from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm.
Yeah, I think she'd do fantastic. Yep. You need a lot of sense of humor for this role. You cannot get a super serious actress to do it. I think Chloe Bennett has a bunch of sense of humor. If you follow her on Twitter, she's pretty funny. And she already, like, is endowed into the comic book stuff. Endowed? That wasn't the right word, but it's fine. She gets it. She gets how the whole universe and stuff works. I think she'd be fantastic.
Sure, yeah.
She'd be uncanny, even.
I really only have one idea, but it's just so important to me that I want to throw it out there and see what you guys think. Kid Cable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Josh Brolin, but CGI'd to be smaller.
Oh my God!
It's still Josh. See, and I was thinking, one of the Sprouse brothers could do it.
What if they took all the footage from the Goonies and reused it?
I was thinking, you know how they like de-aged Tony Stark in Civil War?
Right.
Do the same thing, but just make Josh Brolin smaller, physically smaller.
Well,
it's still his head on the bottom.
Why don't we can just de-age Tom Cruise then and have it be Tom Cruise? He's short.
What? Why Tom Cruise?
Because he's short. He's
Connor's
short.
Whole thing was because he's short. Yeah,
he's a short feller.
De-wrinkle his face. I see.
I do have one for Boom Boom.
Wait, let me go first.
Okay.
For Domino, I was going to go with Zazie. I think she did a fantastic job in Deadpool.
Yes, you know, I think she did a great job too.
For Cable, I wanted to go with Ansel Elgort, who was in Baby Driver. I think he's got that babyish kind of, he's obviously a good actor and he's got that babyish look. So I think, hence Baby Driver, maybe. I think he could pull it off. For Boom Boom, since you moved on to Boom Boom, I was going to say Isla Fisher, who was in Wedding Crashers.
Ooh.
Oh, hey, cool. No, I'm super into that. Yeah. She was also in the Andy Samberg Evel Knievel.
Hot Rod.
Yeah, Hot Rod.
Classic.
Yeah. Hot Rod, yeah.
Who's your Boom Boom?
So the humor in there is great.
Yeah, no, she could totally pull off comedy for sure.
Yeah.
I was going to say for Boom Boom, Emma Stone. Especially with the blonde hair, she can do, and she does comedy really well. I think she would be fantastic, especially if she pulls off the like always hungover Boom Boom that we've seen lately. Yeah. Matthew Rosenberg in the New Mutants Dead Souls run had a joke where like she was always at brunch, it seemed like. So I think Emma Stone could work. But I mean, for Kid Cable, I'm sticking with we just cast Tom Cruise and de-age him, and boom, you got him. Just make him look like a child.
All right, guys, I have a Warpath that's going to blow your mind. You've never even thought of this, and it's going to blow your mind so much, you're going to wish he never made Aquaman. Jason Momoa.
No, I knew it. Yeah.
That's like the perfect choice. Like,
it is.
Get him.
It is the obvious choice. Yeah.
I agree with that.
It's obvious? I thought it was clever. Damn.
sorry. I didn't totally mean to defuse
you. Okay, let me throw you off again. Michael B. Jordan as Cannonball, because we already know he can pull off being on fire.
Okay, that's a good choice. That's a quality choice.
You're talking about Fantastic Four.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I thought you had some personal knowledge.
No, he's not a stunt double.
I saw him handle being on fire really good one time.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, whoa, okay.
How about Deathlok, though? Deathlok's a hard choice.
I have one for Deathlok, and it might make people upset.
Uh-oh.
Idris Elba. And here's why it might make people upset. Because most of his face and body is going to be covered. And he's a very, very sexual man. Like, let's be honest. He's a very good-looking feller. I enjoy him a lot. I think he's a fantastic
actor. Let's be honest. Everyone's a very sexual person, I mean.
Hear me out about Deathlok.
Okay.
Forrest Whitaker.
Is he too old?
Okay, but he has to.
But that's the thing.
He has to do the voice from Rogue One. He has to do that the whole time.
No.
They sent you to kill me? There's not much of me left.
I don't like that idea.
The host.
Sorry.
From Deathlok's hosts age over time, right? And then he swaps to an ex body or whatever. Yeah. I'm kind of into this old man Deathlok.
Uh-huh. It's Forrest Whitaker. Oh, I think it's perfect. Shatterstar, and I have a left field pick, but I think it's perfect.
Okay, go ahead.
Conan O'Brien.
Oh, Jesus.
Hmm.
Yeah. He's tall. He's not out of shape. He's not in shape, but he's not out of shape, so we could whip him into shape real quickly. He's got a great sense of humor. He's got the hair. I think he's perfect.
Interesting. Maybe a little old, though.
Maybe.
I wouldn't dislike the kid that's playing, he was in Shameless, and he's playing the Joker on Gotham now.
Yeah. Something, Cameron Moynihan? Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I really do think Cameron Moynihan should be playing Carnage in the next Venom movie.
Ooh. But you don't like Woody Harrelson doing the same thing he does over and over again?
in the Sideshow Bob. What's
the over-under on there being a laugh from Woody Harrelson in the Carnage movie.
So spoilers, if you've ever wanted to watch the end of the Venom credits. So we're going to finish the show. This is the way we finish our show every week. We're going to be talking about our weekly, it's called Weekly Soapbox, where one of the co-hosts, goes on a rant, or maybe rant is too harsh of a word, but they say it like it is about something in the
comics.
Say
it with your chest.
Something that's comics related, and this week Forrest has the floor.
God, he's got thoughts.
Yep, I do. I have thoughts. I don't want to at anyone. We can't open with news saying don't at creators and then bookend it with Nick Lowe, editor of Spider-Man, we need to talk.
Wow.
But Nick Lowe, editor of Spider-Man, we need to talk about Spider-Geddon, which is to say that Miles Morales came out in the midst of Spider-Geddon and completely and totally diffused the tension of that event. There is a bit in the newest Miles Morales issue, number one, by Saladin Ahmed, which I absolutely loved, where he's going and he's washing his suit, and his mom comes to him and says, "Miles, that better not be blood on your suit," or something to that effect. And he says, it is. I'm really tired, but I'm okay. There was a bunch of intergalactic vampires. We saved everyone. It's all right. This came out before Spider-Geddon number 5, the end of that event. And I was like, okay, everyone's fine, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can kind of assume that knowing that Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider, is going to continue. Miles is spinning out into his own series, and Superior Spider-Man is going to continue as well. But in particular, the line, "everyone is okay." I was like, come on. And there's an editor note that specifically says, Miles led the charge in Spider-Geddon. See that?
Well,
okay, guys.
I feel like that's there. It got worse within Spider-Geddon, because what we were talking about, what was the Spider-Geddon spinoff series we were talking about that got ruined?
Spider-Force.
Yeah, Spider-Force.
So I'll get to, this is a twofer.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Force, written by Christopher Priest, a really cool series, at least in premise. And then it kind of fell apart in the plotting and the writing. But the premise was that Kane hand selects a couple of the most ruthless spider people to go and kill Verna, one of the inheritors. And he takes them all to this radioactive planet where Verna is getting the crystal that has Solas, the father inheritor's spirit, in it. And this is in the first issue, so it's not that big of a spoiler, and it's also in the solicits, but basically Kane has one of the universe jumping watches on, and he lets everyone else on the Spider-Force know that only his works. They all have watches on, but he says, yours are intentionally broken. Mine is the only one. If we don't finish this job, we're not coming back. So it's kind of a suicide mission at that point. Spider-Geddon number 4 features Spider-Woman, Jessica Drew, who has a broken watch, jumping into the end of that issue.
Right.
So we know something happened. We know she's fine. The portal is still open behind her. There's an editor note that says, see Spider-Force. Uh-oh. Well, it's not out yet.
Do you think that's Nick Lowe's fault, or is it like the printers?
I don't know. I know that in the case of Exterminated, coming out before Extermination number 5, that I think there were some editorial and printing delays there, and that shouldn't have happened. But they've got editorial notes all throughout Spider-Geddon that say stuff like, see Spider-Force, see Spider-Geddon, time is a loop, it even says in one.
Right.
This isn't Looper, guys.
Sorry,
just put him out on time, or cop to the fact that you need to write standalone tie-ins that work
right
that way.
Yeah, and I loudly grunted when you brought up Exterminated, because that was that series which I thought was pretty good. I actually very much enjoyed it, but like, what was it? The standalone issue that was about everybody dealing with the deaths of Cable, that
Exterminated.
That was Exterminated. Yeah, sorry, I'm thinking of. But anyway, it was the Exterminated, wasn't it? What it was called, right? Something like that.
I think that maybe.
But like that came out before the series was over, so it felt
before Extermination number 5, which came out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, which was a little weird. And then the fact that like Extermination was supposed to lead into Uncanny X-Force, and it was supposed to be like Extermination ends, Uncanny X-Force kicks off. And then you have like Extermination is still going on when Uncanny X-Force...
When X-Force started,
Do I keep saying X-Force? Yeah. I keep meaning to say X-Men.
You say Uncanny, but you mean X-Force, yeah.
No, I mean Uncanny X-Men, but when I think Uncanny, I always think of...
Oh.
Because...
Gotcha.
I'm sorry, guys. But anyway, but Uncanny X-Men just... It totally takes away the tension of Extermination, because you're like, all right, well, the young X-Men are 100% gone, so we know that. Which I know we kind of knew was coming, but still, it like ruins any suspense.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. Marvel was able to pull off Amazing Spider-Man on a weekly basis a couple years ago. If they can do that, how come they can't get these tie-ins to come out on time? Is my question. Unless there was some snafu with scheduling, and someone was like, wait a minute, that issue should have came out last week. Oh no.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If Marvel expects you to buy all these tie-ins, then they better get it right.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, I understand how hard it is. I think I've done Nat charts and all sorts of scaffolding and planning for work events, and it's impossible. It's really, really hard. But in Superior Spider-Man this week, and this is really the perfect asterisk on the whole conversation, there's an editor's note in Superior Spider-Man, I don't know if you saw this, Dave, where it just says, see this issue, an event exhausted Nick. And I was like, what? You're just pointing people all over the place. Your editor's notes should almost be enough to add context without me needing to go and dig through my entire box.
Right.
They shouldn't be traffic control.
Next week on Weekly Soapbox, we're going to be talking about Connor's inability to say uncanny X-Men. No,
Dave and I will tag team that
they
one.
They keep applying the uncanny adjective to too many series.
Remember when they had Uncanny Avengers? That was great fun.
See?
No, but that's it for our show. If you liked the show, please subscribe. We're going to be doing this weekly and probably a little shorter than this show is because this is our first show and we're going to be tightening up the screws and bolts and our mouths so that we talk a little bit more efficiently, probably. But if you like the show, please share with your friends because we are committed to doing this. And we're going to be talking about news and all the upcoming and past greatness that is comic books. And it is our passion.
See ya.
Thank you.
Oh, bye. Sorry. follow me on Twitter.